recording of Willie's new tape, new reel, Monday, 11th of May, 1970. Monday, the 11th of May, 1970. Channel 1 right. Channel 1 right. Willie came up while we were working the cattle, working the miss, taking care of little 18. There he came. I heard that voice. This is One Whole Side. Channel 1 right. This new reel, 11th of May, 1970. Monday morning. Monday morning. Channel 1 right.
Things.
Well, how
do
those things
come on?
He
brought
his cattle back there, and he was
cattle.
And money wise?
Yeah.
Well, they're pretty expensive. I wouldn't want one to sell.
You wouldn't?
No, because it's the kind that when you get through with it and pull it out, it's just on two wheels in a box sitting back there.
Yeah. What's the matter with it?
Well, there's so much about them that are subject to have to be replaced and flimsy. Like I was telling your wife, wife cousins, agent for them, Oak Palatka. And, of course, he has one that I could use it, or he'd let me have one, you know, if I wanted to use one. You might say for nothing, but to buy one, I wouldn't buy one. I wouldn't put my money. They want too much money for me.
Well, now that's why I didn't ask you what it cost. I figured that's about as cheap one as you could get.
Well, they're cheap, and they're cheap.
Yeah.
They're. Well, anything that collapses like that is bound to give you trouble. And this boy's done found this out. He's found out that you can be. You're gonna like you know, you just you take a crank. You got a crank that you just roll the thing in, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You go on, I believe it's the left rear corner and the left front corner. Now that's facing it from the front and if you're facing it from the rear, you got a little thing, you pull that plug back like your flywheel thing, you know, and you stick this crank in there. And you crank this end down, and then you go to the other end, and then you crank it a little bit. And pretty soon, you get it all just like a box, you know. It all goes together.
Yeah.
Everything in there goes together.
Yeah.
And he says sometimes them things will get hung up, and you get it half up or half down. And he says then you have to get mad with it, kick it a couple of times, and he says you hurt your toe. And, but he says other than that, he says they do all right. It's.
I tell you one nice thing about it, Willie. It's open. You see, from this high on up to the roof, it's open.
Yeah, you can get fresh air.
Yeah. And them others...
It's too closed in.
Closed up just like a jail.
Uh-huh.
And...
You can take that, though, and like you say, right, it's right at the bed level, where you sit, you know, it's screened in.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can get all that stuff. All those pieces, parts are replaceable. They have parts. You know, it's all pieces. And you can buy these pieces. Like your screen, now your screen, it gets from folding it up and then it's a plastic. See, just plastic screen.
Right, and it wears out.
It gets a little worn. And if you pinch it, get it pinched in there and you drive from here to Tampa or somewhere, you might have rubbed a hole in the whole shebang. You got to be particular about that.
Oh, I see.
Because all that thing folds into one. Well, the one he had is that I was looking at for his own personal trailer. It's been about 3 weeks ago. Sybil's uncle, which is his wife, which my wife and his wife's first cousin, not him, but anyway, her uncle lived down Bellevue, and so when he died here about 3 weeks ago, he pulled one of them things down there because the house was very small, you know, not enough room for people coming from Carolina and various places around. So he pulled one of them down, and that thing slept, I believe it was eight people, comfortably, eight people it slept.
Yeah.
And it had a stove, had everything in there.
Yeah.
And I helped him, put it back together, you know. We went down there. Of course, we hadn't visited when we used to go over there and spend a weekend with them people over at Palatka and go fishing on the St. John River, you know. And but anyway, I had thought of them. I believe Nimrod or something like that's the name of the thing. Nimrod.
You have no idea what they cost?
I believe he said that thing cost around $1,600.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he said it cost around $1,600. Now, you can get them in the same size with a better grade of stove, a better grade of this, or more of that, or more of this, or less, and you can make the price whatever you want to in that same 8-person size. It'll sleep 8 people.
He got a good stove. They don't cook inside.
Yeah, just move all that stuff, take it outside.
But he got a stove. He got one from Sears. It looks like that old-fashioned camp stove where you used...
You know, you talking about the old Coleman stove? Well, that's what Nimrod sells. If they purchase the stuff themselves, that's what they put in there.
But this one he got from Sears, and it's got a, you know, that bottle of gas, that little 25-pound thing with a tube on it that goes right to that stove, and it's a corker, and it's got, you know, just a little windshield there, and apparently that's all it needs.
Yeah, as the wind changes, you move your stove to keep the wind. Brother got one of them things, and it works fine until the wind gets to whipping too bad. But if the wind, just like it's blowing out there now, normal breeze ain't gonna take too. It ain't gonna hurt it too bad if it blows straight. You see this shield around it. If it's blowing straight in this way, it has tendency after so much air gets up there, you know, it'll break over. And it really don't bother unless it's whipping awful bad.
Yeah.
It's surprising. Now we've set up, you know, and we'll put that thing, we'll figure now the wind's blowing from this direction at the strongest, you know. So we just set up that way and it'll whip around, you know. You can hear the burning go like that every now and then, but as far as it has to be pretty rough, you know.
Well, what do you have?
I don't have anything.
You're just deadbeat.
I'm a louse. A leech.
Leech.
I'm leeching everything I can off everybody. Hey, goodness. Yes, sir, boss. But anyway, he's been selling these things some little while. And he says this Nimrod is the best that there is. That's Nemrod, I believe, the way it's spelled. And he claims that's the best on the market now. Whether it's because he's selling this particular brand now or not, I don't know. You know, some people, whenever they're selling a particular brand, they got one to sell and they want to take it and move it out of the way, so they take up a lot of time to brag on it. I let him know, you know, that I didn't want one. He needed to tell me nothing about it because I wasn't planning on buying one. And he quit talking that sales talk.
You know, that sales talk, Willie, is so conspicuous.
Oh, yeah. It sticks out just like you thumb to me.
You know, I'd get along better with them if they'd tell me what's wrong with it.
Yeah, and then I'd know what I'd have to do to get it going, get it fixed.
Yeah.
But them people, I'm telling you, down at Orlando, that sell them automobiles, I don't know what's the name, I noticed yesterday afternoon, you know, I was sitting there. Sitting there looking at the TV, and this man, he jumps up on top of his car, you know, and crushes the tops in. You've seen him, I know, hadn't you?
Yeah.
And he just hollers and screams and carries on, you know, and oh, you can have it half price, and tears the paper in two. I said yesterday, I was telling baby daughter, she said, I just can't stand to look at TV on Sunday afternoon on Channel 2 on account of that old man. Said, I don't like to hear him lie so much. I said, it just goes in one ear and out the other with me. I said, but what bothers me is the fact that he, not only since you mentioned that he lies, he's got to be doing little of that, he clutters up the countryside with those papers he's tearing up and throwing in the wind. You know, the wind's always blowing down there, you know, and he tears his paper and the wind gets them and just sails them. Well, they ought to put him in jail for littering the premises. You know, he's a litter bug.
Smokey
gets him. He's had. But you know, that I ain't kidding you. That man, Well, I know two people went down there to buy a car. Actually, his car is higher than they are around Gainesville. And Gainesville, the highest town around 40 miles of him. Gainesville, a high town. I mean, you know, everything runs higher, a little higher than it does in the West. But both men that I've talked to said, don't ever go to Orlando to buy a car if you plan on buying it from this place. He says that man will cheat you. Says you're a gypped when you walk on the lot. Says he's got you covered. And he says you do good to get out of there with your shirt taken. Because says he's just nasty. But he's going to steal everything he can before you leave there.
Willie, I want to hear somebody talk about trading. You know, the old-fashioned way of trading was to beat people out of something. All these cattle dealers, cattle men right around.
Skin them.
I want to hear some of them talk. And I don't know any of them. They won't talk to me. This fellow Keene is the only one left around here that I happen to know. He lives over there at Anthony. He knows all the old tricks, but he wouldn't talk to me. You think up something. You might think up somebody that you know. I can hear them. We'll talk about it.
Man that I knew is dead.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, he talked to a post just to get a chance to tell a lie.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. He walked right up to that ladder out and speak to that ladder and start talking to him about how he used to beat people trading, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
I ain't kidding you. That old man was a dog. I mean, he had, back whenever I was a child, he lived just about a mile from home, straight back in the woods west of us. And he says...
right there where you're living?
No, my home place, on down the road from where I'm living, down at Fleming's.
I don't know where your home place is, do I?
It's on the right down there before you get to the crossroads of Fleming's. Instead of coming to my house, you go on down that paved road toward Fleming's. Second house on the right before you get to the crossroads. In other words, it's two houses coming back north toward where I live. You count one, two, three houses rather. Counting the Johnson's right down and near the crossroads, it's three houses. It's the third house. But actually, we had one of those tremendous large. It was a four-horse wagon, not a two-horse, but a four-horse wagon. One of those big wagons, taking two big mules to pull it. And then that was just a wagon. Had them with wide tires like that, you know. But we never used it much. And, had two other wagons there that we used anyway. Had another two-horse and a little old single horse, one-horse wagon. But that old man got to wanting that two-horse wagon. Now that old big heavy-duty job, got to wanting that thing. And he just had to have it. And I never will forget how he carried on about that thing, you know. And when he get a trading mood for something, he'd get it. He'd keep on. He'd keep working at it, you know. And he'd throw in stuff that wasn't no good. You know, make a big pile of junk. When he's going to make a trade, well, he'd go out and he'd gather up all kind of stuff, you know. And he worked at that one thing until he got it. Now, that's the way them old fellas used to do. And when they traded, they just more or less stole what they wanted.
Yeah.
Now, he finally got that two-horse wagon. And Daddy didn't have enough of stuff that was worth a cuss to even mention a trade. I mean, he was ashamed to talk about it. That's right. He was ashamed to say that he traded. He always said, I gave old man Williams that wagon. He never would say he traded. People come there, there were different people, you know. The old man down there, Fairfield, knew that Daddy had this old big wagon. And he come up there and he says, I want to buy that old big wagon that you got. Daddy says, I hadn't got it. He says, I gave it to old man Steve Williams.
And they knew what he meant.
Yeah, he never would admit, though, that he traded with him. Because he didn't get anything in the trade. Just a bunch of junk. Stuff that he couldn't use.
Yeah.
Couldn't use it. And,
Jake.
You don't fool Jake Lightner, do you?
Lightner, his daddy, he'd know some of those wouldn't he? He used to go around the country picking up equipment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, Jake, Lawrence will probably give you some, he can tell you some pretty good stories. But that.
What do you talk?
I
see, he don't know me.
Uh-huh.
I know Jake. Uh-huh. Jake's lied, you know, he lies.
Oh, man, do you know it?
I mean, he talked to me.
Well, I tell you what Lawrence and Jake did to me one time. I had this, I planted some velvet beans and corn. I had a few hogs, you know. And the darn stupid hogs wouldn't break the beans down. They just eat what they could get to without, you know, breaking down. I never had a hog like that before. Most hogs I've seen would ride corn down and everything, you know, ride the bushes to get if beans run out in the bushes, they'd ride them bushes down and get them beans. Well, they were just housed up under those bean bushes, and of course it's in the dead fall, you know, the beans are dead. You know what I'm talking about. You know how velvet beans would grow up and die on the bushes, and, weeds and things, corn stalks. They were only just living off of what they could get, what would win a drop out, you know, blow out of the rot off and fall down. And they're just worlds of beans up in these old coffee weeds and corn stalks that they just wouldn't break down. I didn't have no chopper, and so I did a little piece of work for Lawrence over there, a little electrical work, and got through. I gave him a bill, which I didn't make it. I should have made it more than what I did, since it turned out like it did. But he's always hard to get money out. Always hard to get money out. And Jake's worse. But anyway, I happened to see this old corn stalk chopper, not a weed chopper of the modern type, but one of these old stalk choppers. And somebody had taken that thing and kind of revamped it and fixed it to where they could pull it behind a tractor. You know, you used to pull them with a mule, a stalk chopper, you know, it's just a thing that you got a seat back there, you ride on it.
Oh.
And this wheel, it's so like a regular chopper wheel, but it just run over every stalk, row of corn stalks. Call them stalk choppers, you know, cotton chop, cut cotton stalks up, such as that, you know. Any kind of stalks, just run over each row, you know. Put a team of mules, one in each middle, you know, and straddle and put a team you behind it. We used to have
two.
Oh yes, and so you could anyway. They'd taken that thing and fixed it up where you could put it behind a tractor, you know. And
but somebody had to ride it.
No. Oh no.
Not
anymore. And I see that. I said, "Say, what about coming over out of the house and running that chopper over these weeds and knock them down?" I said, I don't care about being chopped up, really. I said, all I want is just knock them down where the hogs can get to the bend. He said, well, he didn't know about that. I said, well, how much you charge? And he says, he said, I don't know. I said, Jake, how much you reckon it? We could do it for Jake. He's just, that's back. Jake was about 15, 16 years old, you know. Maybe a little over than that. He said, I don't know. He said, how much is it? I said, well, it's less than 5 weeks. He said, well, so $25 ought to be a good price. I said, no, heck. I said, I'll pay you no $25 to run that thing over. I said, because there's spots out there you don't have to run on. I said, they ain't but about 2 acres that you actually got to run over. And I said, I just want to knock them weeds down that's holding up these beans and these corn stalks and things. I said, there's spots out there where they fell on their own because the weeds wasn't thick enough. They just, you know, 4 or 5 little spots where there's a lot of beans up in there. So,
they're going to charge you more than the beans is worth.
Oh, sure. And so I told him, I said, just forget about it. And way it was, you see, I had $15 worth of material in a little job I'd done there. And I should have really there was more labor entailed in this work that I'd done than there was material, but I didn't charge him $25. And what he was after was getting his $25 back, see, and I seen that right off. So I went on home. Well, they cooked some syrup that day, and so I said something about wanting a bucket of syrup, you know, one of the small half a gallon buckets, a 5 pound bucket, because ain't nobody at me that eats it. And so he set the bucket down there. Well, Jake went and got it, and we forgot about it. I didn't ask him what he charged for it or anything. Anyway, I went on to the house, and when I got to the house and got back, got out there and got to doing a little work, cooling around, why, here come Jake on the tractor, pulling that chopper behind it, you know, right down the road wide open. Chopper just flying up there, you know, just flapping behind him. And holding a bucket of syrup in his lap. He pulled up there. Well, Daddy told me to come on over here and chop this thing down for you, whatever you want chopped. Says, here's your syrup. I said, well, I forgot about the syrup. I said, how much you want for that syrup? And he said, well, Daddy said you'd have to pay him $2 or he'd have to for me to bring it back. I said, $2 for that? I said, shoot, man, that syrup don't sell for no $4 a gallon. And I said, that ain't a half a gallon anyway. I said, ain't but 5 pounds, ain't it? Yeah, I think it half a gallon weighs about 5 3/4 pounds or something like that. And he says, well, he said, Daddy said you could have it for $2. I said, all right. I said, I'll give you $2 for it. So I set it on a post there, on the fence, you know. Set it up on a post. And never thought, you know. See, I told him I'd give him $10 to come over there and knock them weeds down. I never thought to ask him what he was going to charge, if it was still for $10 or what, since he come over there, I figured it was $10, see. So Jake went out there and he knocked them down, and didn't take but about an hour. And the briars, there where I got that barn built, the briars was up, oh, about that high, these old real thorny briars, you know. So he had to pull out around, and he run across the edge of the briars to get lined out where he could go in that gate from out of one end to the other, you know. So when he come back out, he made 3 or 4 circles out through them briars and tore them all up, you know, and kind of cleaned up a little spot there where it's really thick with them briars. And so I said, well, how much owe you, Jake? So well, Daddy said, I have to have $25. I said, you kiss my butt. And he said, no. He said, Daddy said you got to have $25. I said, you better get that tractor in the road and go on home. I said, I ain't going to pay you nothing. I just figured Jake was trying to rib me, you know, rook me out of some money. So I didn't pay him for the syrup either. He went on down the road, and I take the syrup and went on to the house. And wasn't long, Lawrence come pulling up. So, well, how come? And both of us born and raised together in the same community, you know. I ought have known better than to fool with him. I've known him all my life. I says, he come flying up there. He said, how come you didn't pay the boy for the work he done? I said, I told you I'd give you $10 to do that work. And I said, you sent the boy over here, and I figured since you sent him over here, you was accepting it at $10. And I said, he said he wants $25. He said, well, that's what I charge, $25. I says, yeah, but I said, I told you to forget about it. And I said, we agreed that you wasn't going to come over there. And he said, well, you forgot the syrup. So I decided I'd just send the boy on over with the syrup. So I figured you wanted some for supper. Now, this is how shrewd he is, you know. He said, I knew you was really hankering for a mess of that syrup. And he said, because you said so. I said, yeah, but I done forgot it. Probably might not have thought of that thing for another month. And he said, well, anyway, so I want $27. I said, Lawrence, your syrup's too high. And I said, I ain't going to give you no $25 for that work. I said, tell you what I'll do. I'll give you $12 for the syrup and the work. I said, I'll give you $2 because I said, I didn't ask the price of that syrup. I said, in the first place, so I said, the boy shouldn't have brought it over here. But I said, since you did, I'll give you $2 for the syrup. I'll give you $10 for the work. I told you I'd give you $10 for it. I said, the boy was out there about an hour. It's all it takes to knock them few little weeds down. And I said, he fooled around at that. And I said, in the whole process, he could have come over here and knocked them down and have been back to the house in less than an hour's time, or right at an hour's time. He said, well, he says, I can't help that. He said, I told you I want $25. And said, I'm going to have my $25. I'm going to get the law on you. I said, well, I said, Lawrence, I said, I've heard of you being kind of rough about these things, but I said, I didn't know you'd be that rough. He said, well, I said, I paid you $25 for doing that work for me and and didn't fuss about it too much. I said, no. I said, you stood there and cried alligator tears because you... see, I first charged him $30, and I should have charged him $50. And he said, well, and he's that tight fella, you know, as long as he's doing you down, why, it's all right. But when you go to, or he can get something for nothing, why, so he kept on, you know, and I said, well, I ain't gonna pay you. And he got in his truck and stormed away from there like a madman. The next day, why, I was down at the store. And the fella in the store said to me, well, he said, how come you gonna let Lawrence sue you? I said, Lawrence sue me? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, he claimed that you owe him several hundred dollars and he's gonna bring suit against you for working his underage son and his equipment and stealing from him and this, that, and that. That's great, God Almighty. And I went on up there and I said, Jake, Lawrence, I said, what in the world wrong with you anyway? He said, what do you mean? I said, people down at the store tell me about you gonna sue me and I owe you all this pile of money.
Excuse me.
He said, well, I am. So I'm gonna get my money if I have to cut you through. I said, well, I'll just pay you. And I said, let me tell you something. I said, don't you ever fool with me. I said, don't you ever fool with me. And you know that joker owes me money now and won't pay me? He wouldn't pay me for the rest of the money. His wife, the whole family, just the same way. A sorry bunch of white people. But now he's got...
With you knowing him, Willie.
And me knowing him. But his mother's a finer woman walked in this life. His mama's a wonderful woman. Wonderful woman. But old Lawrence married this girl, if I might say it. And her daddy was the man you'd have to talk to have known. To have known a thief, a horse thief. Not a horse trader, but a horse thief. Now her daddy was a man that if he seen a cow in the ditch, used to be open range, you know, over that way. And if he seen a cow and figured you wasn't watching, he'd lasso that cow and put him in the back of his truck right there without a load and shoot, a horse, anything. He'd lasso that cow and hook you, tie him to the fence, and then back the truck down the ditch and booger that cow up into that truck and carry him right on to the market right then. He'd go out every day, market day, and he'd pick up cows all day long. He used to do it, made a living out of stealing cows. Well, what he's doing is these old colored folks, he couldn't defend themselves and was scared at him. He went to that brush lot, this old nigger woman, old widow woman, she had this one old milk cow, and that's all she's living off the milk that cow was giving. Had this one old milk cow and a calf. And, he put the cow in the truck and her begging him not to. And he got by with it. As sure as I'm sitting here. And he did it another time. Old Lawrence used to heck him when he was here back before the war when they first got married, right about World War II and just before Lawrence and Juanita got married. And Lawrence is a little bit older than I am, several years older than I am, rather. And he got married a good little while before I did him. He fooled around with his old pap-in-law, and he got to be just as big a crook as old Lonnie Jennings was. And Jennings was one of the biggest thieves there was in Marion County. And everybody will tell you, he'd rather steal a cow than to buy it or raise it, because it's quicker money. He'd tell you so. I ain't kidding, he'd tell you so. He'd tell you right quick. But he stole up many a cow from poor folks. He couldn't have, you know, wouldn't defend himself.
Well, now, is anybody much around in the country there that knows that now?
There's a lot of them know it, but whether they'll talk about it or not, I don't know what I mean. You know, whether they say anything about it.
They remember it.
They remember old Jennings and how he used to steal.
They don't have much occasion to talk about it anymore.
Well, it's such a few that really know about it or had any connections with him, or, you know, it's most of it's hearsay. People, you know, say, well, I heard so and so. But that, I guess, from what I can understand, he got caught red-handed and cooted out of it down at Fairfield. He lived out there, had a farm, nice farm out from Fairfield. And he cooted out of that deal.
He got the law there.
Trying to get, he was such a liar, and he could make people believe, you know, especially the law, that he was doing such and so. And every now and then, you know, if they had a benefit drive, he'd give $100 or $2 to it, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He'd keep the law in people, you know, people that really didn't know him close up, you know. A lot of people around Ocala and in the county thought, you know, he was a wonderful man. But he'd steal from the poor folks and go out there and make a big show, and, you know, man gonna run for office, he'd give him $700,000, you know, like a county office or something. He'd give him money, you know, to campaign on. Yeah,
he's outstanding in the community then.
Oh, everywhere except with the poor folks where he'd steal off of, you know. They used to say it's all right to steal from the rich and give to the poor, but they sure hated that stealing from the poor giving to the rich, and that's what old Lonnie Jennings used to do. But he got caught out there, loading these folks' cows up. You know he got out of that thing? Yes, sir, he got come clear.
He just knew how.
Yeah. Fastest talking white man, or any man that the people around there said they ever heard tell of, and I knew it. Didn't personally know him real well. But
Willie Jake's been to school, and he's had a little more influences. Now he's not going to be able to live up to the tradition.
Well, he run around with his granddaddy too. Yeah, he rode with his granddaddy. Yeah, he rode with his granddaddy a good bit. His granddaddy ain't been dead too long. But Lawrence got that stuff from old. He come from a good family. You take the rest of them Lightners are good people. Lawrence is all right, but you can't do no business with him. You can't deal with him to save you. He's going to cheat you, jip you, or do something to, or just like this boy over there, they cut hay together, and he got this old boy bought a brand new hay baler. Jake Lawrence was cutting it, and he was baling it, and they were doing it on shares. And Jake Lawrence had a bunch of hay of their own they wanted cut, see, that they'd bought. And they beat that boy out of every nickel that he earned. I mean, flat beat him out of everything. He even carried it to court, and the boy lost his money. Jake and him even won out in court against the man. Man couldn't even get his wages. That's just how they ain't smart. They ain't neither one of them finished high school.
That's true.
It's true. They learned from that his old pappy-in-law. They learned how to deal. That Jake didn't get no higher than about. Well, me and him about got the same amount of education.
But he couldn't.
Lawrence himself got about the same amount of education. Jake, I think Jake never did learn nothing in school. The teachers always passed old Jake, you know, as far as he got up to about the 7th, 8th grade.
Oh.
They just passed him along, get him out of the room. He'd stay in the room so long, you know, they get tired of looking at him.
Yeah.
And so finally he just quit. He couldn't. He can't read. What little reading he does, I mean, you know, like you or I'd take a paper and read it out loud to where I'm not bragging about myself, but you probably read it where everybody could understand it, you know. He just when he's gonna say is out of the or something like that, you know. He just don't. He can't read. He don't know how. Never did learn. This oldest daughter of mine is same age as Jake. They started off school together.
She always felt sorry for Jake.
But now Lawrence couldn't just sit down and tell you how he operates.
Lawrence ain't gonna tell you about that, because Lawrence always tries to make people think he's better than what he is. Lawrence ain't gonna tell you about these things.
Well,
he might accidentally tell something bragging, you know, and not mean it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He'd say, well, he'd be bragging about what he did or said, and then say, well, I didn't mean it. I was lying.
Yeah.
But he actually had done it, you know.
Yeah.
Let me get through with your work here. I got to go. Who told you I was working at the university?
Nobody. I thought you were. Your brother gone back with
you.
With,
no, I went to work at the university.
Huh?
I went to work at the university.
I just give you out up there.
There for it.
Up the university. I didn't know you were going to even consider that anymore.
Had I talked to you about that?
Yes. You said they had some good places open, but they wouldn't give them to you because you hadn't finished high school.
Yeah, but that's been some 2-3 years ago that I applied for work up there that I was telling you about. But anyway, this job come up, and I hadn't even thought about going to work up there, to tell you the truth, but I hadn't thought about going to work anywhere. I was doing anywhere from a day to 2 days, average a week for Martin. And of course, I'd got to be a family leech, you know, just leeching off of the family. He's giving me $40-$50 a week, you know. And even if I didn't come up there, he'd come down and bring me a check. And sometimes I wasn't doing that. And some weeks I did do good bits, you know, but if I worked over that much, he'd pay me for whatever I worked over. But he always gave me $40 to $50 a week if I didn't do anything at all. And if I worked more than that, why, of course, like I say, why. If I worked over a day and a half, 2 days, why, he'd usually give me $70-$75. So, well, anyway, I got tired of that, and I told him, I said, well, I said, now just, when I work for you, you can pay me for what I do. I said, quit just handing me these checks. And so he just kept on. So I said, well, the best thing you do is to get a job somewhere.
Well, did it work out pretty good? Then you just don't do much, is that?
I ain't doing nothing.
You don't come home tired at night?
Well, I come home tired, but it's because I'm up there at night. I work at night up there. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I work at night up there. I ain't doing nothing.
Nobody works at night.
Man, you'd be
nobody doesn't.
There's 5,000 people work up at night. Sleep. They ain't doing nothing. Just like me, ain't doing a darn thing.
What are you supposed to?
I really don't know. I'm drawing money for just to be up there, just like everybody else. Ain't nobody can tell you that night what they're supposed to be doing. Ain't nobody.
Well, where are you located?
I'm in the farm section, McCarty Hall.
Yeah.
No, I'm a guard up there, security guard.
Yeah.
No, just joking. I work those farm buildings till 12:30 and lock them up. I work across Radio Road there, botany and ag engineering. And then up in the grove there, the trees, those old university buildings, old farm buildings, and I just check them about every 2 hours. I walk around them, see if there's anything going on, you know. It takes about 2 hours to make a round. I make 4 rounds. Excuse me, the man told me, he said, you don't have to work it out however you want to. He said, we just want somebody that, this is a state requires some kind of security. And say, for instance, a lot of those big shops, they walk out and leave the doors open. And you're supposed to be that 5 o'clock, close the doors up, you know, lock them. They've been leaving the doors open. The administrative part of McCarty Hall there.
Mm-hmm.
People been, well, you know, they just couple of boys had called in there making checks, so they had made a bunch of checks. They couldn't cash them. It wasn't no good. Seems as part of that machine that they can take out that makes the checks void. They no good, you know. And they're not authenticated without this part of it. In other words, this machine is a big thing. You can just reach it in and you just take this part out of it and put it in the vault, see?
Mm-hmm.
And you can make checks all day and all night. University of Florida checks, but they ain't no good.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody goes to cash them. Up in the upper right corner where the date, I believe the boss said, where the date and all that stamp part is, that's left blank. They ain't even, see, it don't even make a... In other words, upper right corner and corner of the check's blank. Anybody that cashes checks or knows anything about checks, see, would recognize right off. He said, you'd even notice that that being just a piece of white paper. You know, they even stamp the color in there. When they run it through there, they even put the whole check. It's just blank paper runs through that. Just blank check paper runs through the machine. It's made right there. You know, the check's made right there. And I don't know whether this is a whole university check set up or whether it's just for the farm area or what. But anyway, whoever was in the building didn't lock it up or in the room there. They didn't lock it when they walked out. Most of those doors, when you shut them, slam them, they's locked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of them. I found that they lock, you know, when they shut you. Have to have a key to get in, but you can get out. You don't have to worry about getting out.
Mm-hmm.
And I found several of those doors in the administrative part where they pulled them up to where, you know, it just didn't click. The lock didn't click. And I don't know whether they left them that way to come back later to do something or what, but I've...
They
got an operator on them, and if that operator don't pull up, it won't shut, and a lot of them, I think.
That's right. You can't close it. You got to let the operator close it.
Yeah, most of them close on the operator, and but some of them I found that if you touch them, the least little touch, you know, will make that thing click, that lock will click. And I just wonder if they stand and hold that thing, hold the pressure on it, see, until it gets up there, and then just not and just stabilize it there, you know, between the pressure on the operator that closes it. You know, some of them will, you can hold them, right, and I've tried it, you can hold back on them until they get right at closing, and you kill that amount of pressure that's built up in, see, what creates the closing power is opening power. If you open it real fast and turn it loose, that builds up more pressure than it does to open it slow and hold it back and not let it close. See, because you got a relief valve on that thing. It's letting that air off, that pressure, which should be, when it hits, coming back, it bounces. You know how one will hit and then it'll go a little ways and then it'll bounce back? Well, that's that created air or pressure in there. But if you hold that thing, it'll just go down to nothing, you know. And it don't have the pressure to really close it because it leaks out before it gets there. Your pressure leaks.
Do you have to drive yourself?
I drive up to the farm area. And two nights a week I use a state truck pickup. Three nights a week I have to use my own. State can't afford it only. See, there's another boy that uses this same truck. And he's been working there 25 years. So they let him. The only state only allows one truck to be used. And actually, the way the setup has been, this man takes these boys out, you know, security guards out, and drops them off at their areas. And there's only two of us now. They did have four. And I just wonder where that money's going. You know what I mean? It's still allocated to the farm out there, you know. Somebody's busting that money up, you know, some of the high officials. Now, this old fella that's been at 25 years, he said, he was the one telling me about it. Not, of course, the boss and that bunch. They ain't going to talk it, I'm sure. But you see, he tells me, he said, now, actually, says there's supposed to be four of us. And he said, I don't know what happened, but says, for the last 3 or 4 months, says, I've only been here by myself. But, anyway, we decided that that them boys in the upper echelon are splitting up this several thousand dollars a month, you know, that's coming in for this purpose. They splitting it up among themselves and not got no guard duty, they see. Well, really what hired me was the fact that a good part of ag engineering burned down, you know. And you can't tell it from the street. I don't know whether you knew it or not.
I didn't know it.
Yes, sir. The back end of that thing ain't nothing but a mass of molded, bent, twisted metal. Burned down.
What happened?
They just, by the skin of the teeth, saved the office part of ag engineering. All that equipment and stuff about the trucks and tractors burned up.
How long has that been?
Oh, a couple of months back.
Oh. Well, why didn't I know about it?
I don't know.
Really?
I tell you, it's a hush-hush deal, Bubba. And they, somehow, you see, they've hired four different people besides me.
Oh.
And they can't get nobody to keep the job. The man at the head up there, at the time, you see, McCarty Hall was not under security guard. And so they had... they used to have a guard on Roth and Newell, and the state said they didn't need it no more because the fact that it was not used, you know, they changed around after they built McCarty Hall. They moved all the administrative part of the farm business out of whichever one it was, Newell a Roth one, whichever one it was. It used to be administrative for farm.
Yeah.
All, I guess, USDA and farm, State Farm headed up there. Well, it don't now. It heads up in McCarty. Well, they quit that up there, see, and this man at the garden, he just fooled around, wasn't doing nothing, undoubtedly. And so when they put him on, they moved the keys out, the punch keys out of Roth and Newell, and put them in McCarty Dairy Science and Food Science. And when they put them in there, what the man said, it was just more than he wanted to do for the money that he was drawing. And he just damn sure wasn't going to do it. According to the boss, the boss said he just refused to do it. So they had to almost take a stick and run him off. He wouldn't do nothing. And so, of course, they couldn't fire him. So he got a job as a janitor, a leader, a bull in a gang, you know, he's bullwhip, or what are you going to call it, in the janitor business, you know, pusher. So, of course,
you don't have to push anything.
No, I just go around there, and he told me, he said, if anything comes up, you don't understand it, or some, perchance, you see something taking place that you don't think right, call the law, call police, so don't fool with it.
But you have to drive in from home. How far is it?
Well, it's only about 19 miles into the farm area. I go 75 into the farm headquarters over there.
Oh.
You know where farm headquarters is.
Yeah.
Well, I drive into there. And that heads up the security business for USDA and farm headquarters out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, so then, like I say, three nights I had to drive my truck. Two nights I drive a state truck.
But actually, it's not.
You see, out on a farm out there, you have to have a vehicle out there.
Too much distance.
Yeah, it's too far apart in your checkpoints. And
I haven't been around the farm much since they moved the warehouses, the headquarters, way on out there.
Yeah, they moved out there, you know, out there on the south side of Alice Lake.
Yeah. It's so far out there, I didn't. And it's so much out there now, I get lost.
Oh, it is. I'm telling you, I didn't. You know, I was back in there. You know, I
used to
up
be out there all the time.
You know, I worked up that in and around the campus for 8-10 months. Working up there for CC Black.
So you don't need a high school diploma.
Well, I tell you, I would have if it hadn't been let it come about like it did. I went there. I mean, I was called about this job, see. And I had mentioned it to a couple of different ones that I hated to give up my little farm deal. You know, I just spent money to have that little few acres bulldozed, which if I hadn't had that done, I would have made other arrangements. I'd have sold my cows and quit that business. But I got that ground cleared up there now. And I hate for it to grow back up in bushes without getting something out of it. So I mentioned to this G.P. Lightner now. You know G.P. He's a he and Lawrence is first cousins. But anyway, G.P.'s sister, Louise Harris, I don't know whether you're familiar or know or not, but she's one of the big dogs in USDF there.
Oh.
Yeah, she's been there for about 20-some-odd years now. She's one of the big jesses up there.
Goodness.
And so he called me, you know, and told me that the job was open. They was looking for somebody that was honest, somebody they could depend on.
G.P. called you?
Well, at first, though, he called old Everett Smith and told Everett Smith if he seen me at church to tell me about it. Well, Everett didn't go to church, but he come by that Monday morning and told me about it. And I said, well, I'm headed up to Gainesville right now, but I said, I don't think I want no job like that. So I went up there, and I got thinking, working along, and I got thinking about it in one of Martin's apartments. And so the phone was hanging out, so I just wonder if they've disconnected this phone yet. And, you know, sometimes when the parties move out, they disconnect them. And people had just moved out, and the phone man hadn't got that yet to take the phone out. So I called. And, of course, I've been knowing Louise all my life. She's a good bit older than I am, but anyway, I've known her. And so I told her that I'd got the message that she wanted to see me. So I said, we're looking for somebody up here to, for a security guard on the farm. And said, I hear you looking for a part-time job. And so this is be an easy job. And said, you can keep your little farm going. And so I talked to her a little bit. And I said, what's the requirements? She said, well, in your case, go talk to Mr. Jones. You got a job if you own it already. So all you got to do is go talk to Mr. Jones, tell him you want it. So I went over there and talked to Mr. Jones, and I said, well, that was the next day I went to see him. First, to start off with, I got let off then, and I went to see a man that didn't have no connections with the thing. And he told me, he said, I'm not the right one. I'm supposed to go see Bill Jones. I don't know whether you know Bill Jones or not. But anyway, as you know how the university is, you can go to all over the countryside and talk to these people, and you never get to the right one. You just keep going, you know. Well, he told me, he says, pay around $300 a month. And he said, we've had trouble. Said, I might as well tell you to start with. Said, because you're going to learn it. Said, there's been four already on this job. And said, they don't. Said, the four we've hired have been young people. And said, they just hadn't been right for the job. Said, they don't want this kind of work. And said, one man, we called him Sleep. And another man, said, he worked 3 or 4 weeks and just left. Another man, he was out there, parked out behind the supply building out there, and he parked the truck behind a building and stole some tickets from one of the head men out there, football tickets. And I don't know. See, you got keys. You can go all over the whole universe.
Oh, yeah.
You got a ring of keys on.
Oh,
you,
Lord.
So he just went in and he stole these
Wow, he just helped himself.
Oh, yeah.
He jumped the candy in it.
He did, yeah. But he goes in there and he gets this, opens up this old professor's desk, opens his desk up and finds these tickets to the Gator Ground game. So he just parks the truck right there and climbs over the fence, he assumes, and leaves. So the next morning, see that you use a truck that's belongs to somebody that uses it in the daytime. See what I mean? You know, somebody drives that same truck out on the farm in the daytime. And so usually you park it back where you get it from, you know. And the man went out there the next morning. He couldn't find his truck nowhere. And so he reported to Mr. Freeman that, Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones reported to Mr. Freeman that somebody had raided the truck shed out there and stole the truck. Found the gate open. And, so, of course, they got out there. Freeman got out there, you know, and they all got to hollering and screaming about somebody had stole this and been in the compound there, you know. And, you know, out at the farm, they got the things, biggest part of the farm is under fence. I call it inside the compound. And so, this feller is telling me about this old story boy that works out there. He said he seen a truck park, and he kind of worked that morning. Said he seen the truck park back there, back of the building he works in. Thought he said, I thought that possibly, he said he knew it, the way it looked, the door was open, you know, and probably it broke down there. And they just didn't get it fixed yet, towed around to the shop. So he didn't say anything about it. About noon, before noon rather, word got out, you know, he found out that they was looking for this truck. So he called Mr. Jones and told him, he says, the truck's down here behind this warehouse where I'm working. And he says, down there behind the warehouse? He says, yeah, he says, the truck down there. And so he sent the shop foreman, and Jones went around there to look, and sure enough, that truck was looking for. And what he done, so he went in this office and found these tickets. He just left the truck door open where he crawled out of it, and hauled Taylor, left the gate open and everything, with those Gatorgraph tickets. I mean, it was to the Gatorgraph football game, you know, that's homecoming, I believe they call it, homecoming game. And so they ain't seen hiding the hair of him or the keys. He carried the keys. The others that have left, they have dropped the keys in the mailbox or something. You know, there's you got a tag on these keys, yeah. Farm keys, you know, and they got a thing that's found dropped in the mailbox, you know, or returned to just University of Florida.
That locks the chain.
So now, the last accounts they've heard of him, and he was the last boy that was working there before I taken the job. This happened about 2 months back. See, I've been working there a month now. Right at it, like a few days in a month. And in other words, I've been dickering with it for over a month. But anyway, the last accounts I heard from this boy is in Jacksonville. The last trace they've had on him is in Jacksonville. They ain't found the keys. They haven't found him yet. But he stole this one of these head Jesse's football tickets, see. Well, anyway, I went in there and talked to Jones. He said, well, so this, and I told him, I said, I believe I'll try the job. He said, well, so now we're going to quit this fooling around. Said, we've taken on people here. Said, they work. Said, we've had them to work. One half a night after a man would turn him loose on the job, after we'd carry him for a week or two to get him trained and everything. And so he just ups and walks off and don't say nothing to nobody. And we're looking for somebody that's going to stick. And so we just tired of fooling with these people and they won't do nothing. And I said, I think I'll try. He said, no, I don't want you to say you'll take it. I said, now listen, Mr. Jones. I said, now I'm not going to take that new job and guarantee you that I'm going to stay here. I said, now if the thing turns out to what I think it will, I said, I'll probably stay here. But I said, I ain't going to promise you nothing until I try the job out. I said, I hadn't tried it out. I said, I don't know too much about it. So he said, well, he said, I can tell you anything you want to know yet if you're not satisfied. I said, well, I said, you told me about how much it pays. I said, but I still don't know what the job really is until I get a chance to go around with this other man and find out what it is. He couldn't tell me. He didn't know. Well, what about a boss now that don't know what the job is? Well, anyway, in the wind up, he tell me, said, well, I says, you go to work Saturday and work through until the next Thursday. I said, no, sir. I said, you can take this job and keep going with it. I said, because I don't do that. I said, I don't work on Saturday. I said, I've had a job like that one time, and I said, I swore I'd never work another job like that. I said, I don't have to work that bad. I said, I'm more or less than a cuss. I said, I'm a family leech. And I said, so far, I said, wife and my brothers have taken care of me. And I said, I ain't worried about no business. I said, I don't want it. And I got up and walked out. So when I got the outer office, secretary said, tell that boy to wait a minute, wait a minute. And I knew her from way back in Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And I said, that's all right. I said, I ain't going to work this job. She said, well, the boss said before you done wait a minute. So he come on out there. He said, come back by here tomorrow. I said, this gentleman been down here. Been by here 4 days in a row. And I said, now you tell me what I really want to know. I said, I don't know. And so he blab. Got me the promise to come by the next day. So I went by the next day. And I said, I want you to go talk to Mr. Dagley. You know Mr. Dagley? Well, I went to talk to Mr. Dagley. And Mr. Dagley said, well, said, I'll see what I can do about this job. I said, what do you want out of this job? I said, well, I'm on Saturday and Sunday off. I said, the rest of the job, as so far as I know, sounds fair. I said, but I haven't tried it out yet. I said, I don't know what. I said, Mr. Jones can't tell me what it really consists of. And I said, if you can't, I don't know. He said, well, this is the next thing. He says, you can have Saturday and Sunday. And we won't make arrangements. And he said, if you want to, he said, I'll take you around and show you what the job really consists of. So he did, and I hired him. And
that's a man gets stuck for that. He don't work out. Now, if he wants to go into working on Saturday or Sunday, it's all right. But now, if he
wants. Yeah. But I don't want that. Where are you going? You got this?
No, I just don't get home now.
Now, that's the end of this fine little session. We're walking out the back door talking. This is the end of Channel 1 Riot around 900. On Monday, the 11th of May, 1970, this hot, dry weather, we've had a drought now for 3 weeks anyhow. Oh, not very ambitious. And this is 5-9-10. The end of Channel 1 Right. This visit was Willie Chitty here at mostly by myself. Faye was in the other room. She had to leave early. She had some musical business in town. On Monday morning, the 11th of May, 1970, the end of Channel 1 Right. And this visit was really unexpected.